Oh, we've come to the last story in the last chapter of the first book of the Bible, the book of Genesis. Last Sunday night, we kind of got close to the end and said there's one more story that I want to focus on in this series that started in January a few years ago on Sunday mornings and through the creation story and the days of creation and the early stories of Adam and Eve and Cain and Abel and leading up to the time of Noah and through that time period. And then more recently on Sunday nights through the stories of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and now Joseph. We've come to the end. It truly is the closing of not only the book of Genesis, but also of a time period of God's direct revelation in human history and a time when God began to specifically reveal himself in order to bring about the reconciliation of the human race. So when we get to Genesis chapter 12 and Abraham, we find that God is beginning to work his plan of redemption. And these stories that we've been reading in the book of Genesis is that ongoing or that unfolding of the plan of God of connecting to man again. From the call of Abraham to the death of Joseph here toward the end of the book of Genesis, God has been actively revealing himself and establishing a plan that will lead to the coming of Jesus, the coming of Messiah. From Abraham on to the end of the Old Testament is all pointing toward the Messiah, all helping us to see the plan of God to bring about Jesus to our world. It began with God's call on this man named Abraham and this great covenant that God made with him. And then his son Isaac, and then his son Jacob. And finally in the fourth generation, the focus on the man Joseph, the 11th son of Jacob. Well, throughout the Old Testament and having started in Genesis, we read this description many times, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. That's a saying, an expression that is found throughout the rest of the Old Testament. And that's a very important phrase for Jewish people even today. The God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. Going back to this time period where God is revealing himself to these generations in order to distinctively call these people and these descendants as his chosen people. The God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob is a term about the chosenness that God is moving in history and connecting to people. Turn with me, if you would, to Genesis chapter 50. I want to read the last seven verses of the book of Genesis tonight. I'm also going to read in a few minutes the first seven verses of the book of Exodus. But for now, the last chapter, verse 22 of Genesis chapter 50. Joseph stayed in Egypt along with all his father's family. He lived 110 years and saw the third generation of Ephraim's children. Also the children of Machir, son of Manasseh, were placed at birth on Joseph's knees. Then Joseph said to his brothers, "I am about to die, but God will surely come to your aid and take you up out of this land to the land he promised on oath to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob." And Joseph made the sons of Israel swear an oath and said, "God will surely come to your aid, and then you must carry my bones up from this place." So Joseph died at the age of 110, and after they embalmed him, he was placed in a coffin in Egypt. Joseph has lived a long life, himself a long life, not as long as Abraham, not as long as Isaac, not as long as Jacob, but still, when you look at the breadth of Joseph's life, 110 years, that's a long time. Joseph only lived in the promised land the first 17 years of his life. And so he has now spent 93 years in Egypt. You think about that. Here he is, a son of promise, a son of the covenant about the land of Canaan and the descendants, but he spends the last 93 years of his life in Egypt. We talked a little bit last Sunday night about Joseph would have been probably, if we have all the timetable right, and it seems pretty clear, He would have been 55 years old when his father Jacob died. He would have lived half of his life up until the point that his father died, and then he has the second half of his life. Verses 22 through 26 really cover the second half of Joseph's life, 55 years. And so he still has half of his life ahead of him. He, of course, stayed in Egypt, and it says in verse 22, along with all his family, his father's family. So even after the famine let up, even after the time when they could have went back to the promised land, they did not. I've wondered, well, why not? Why didn't they go back? Why didn't the descendants of Jacob go back, or some of them go back? There's no indication that any of them went back. It's possible that some of them did, but there's no indication that they did. But they stayed in Egypt, as if Egypt was a part of the plan. And we know that it was part of the plan. It was part of God's plan for Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and his descendants. They stayed in Egypt for a time. And Joseph will say something in a few verses that tell us that they understood that God had made a promise, and God would work to fulfill that promise. But it would be a long time from them. As far as we know, Joseph continued to serve as Pharaoh's high official, although we don't have any more information about that and how long he was in the capacity that he was and exactly what happened after the 7 years of plenty and then the 7 years of famine. We know that probably 2 or 3 years into the 7 years of famine is when Jacob's and his family came and lived in Egypt, and so the famine probably would have continued a few more years, and then after that, we don't know really what happened, but we know that Joseph lived to 110 years old, and he lives long enough to see the third generation of his son, Ephraim. And so, in other words, he was a great-grandfather, or maybe if it's the third after Ephraim, it could be a great-great-grandfather, which makes sense, 110 years old, and generations. I was thinking about Alma Heimbach this past week. She lived to be the age of 95. And we were counting her descendants. I usually read the names of all the descendants of someone when at a funeral service, but I didn't hers because she had over 90. Children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and great-great-grandchildren. And just think, that's from Alma, 95 years old, but imagine another 300 years added to these descendants, these 70 descendants, and how quickly they would multiply. But we know that Joseph was there for a long time, and his family grew at that point, both of his sons that we know of, and he may have had many others as well. We also know that it appears from this text that Joseph was outlived by his brothers. You remember, he was the 11th son, and it would seem that Joseph may have been the first one to die of the sons. Not sure about that, but you look at verse 24, it says, "Then Joseph said to his brothers, I am about to die." Now that doesn't say that it was all his brothers, and even the term was used at times, brothers meant family members. So I don't want to make for sure that that's a literal term, but apparently he outlived, or they outlived, most of them outlived Joseph. And so he was the first one, it appears, although he was the 11th born. So that would tell me that even at this time, the generations still were living a long age, and it won't be until later in Moses that we begin to read after Moses that the generations become shorter and shorter, and there's several texts about that. But anyway, Joseph does seem to be outlived by all or at least some of his brothers. The other thing that I notice when I read these words is, to the very end, Joseph is still taking care of his family. He is still watching over them. He is making sure that they're cared for. He is faithful to his brothers. He is faithful to their descendants. He is watching out for them. And the end of verse 24 says, "I'm about to die, but God will surely come to your aid and take you up out of this land to the land he has promised." He's thinking about his family. He's thinking about his future, their future. And he's thinking about the promise that God made to Abraham. I think in these short verses, we have a picture of Joseph. He's about to die. He seems to be outlived by his brothers, but he's still taking care of the family. He's making sure that their needs are met, but also he's thinking about who God is and God's promises to the family. And that's an important part of the end of Joseph, or the character we see in this man Joseph as he finally passes away and leaves the scene. He's reminding his brothers about the covenant. He's reminding his brothers that this family is a part of the story of God. Joseph seems to be the keeper of the family record, and he reminds them the God who revealed to Abraham, on oath to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, has said that he's going to bring you out of this land. He's going to take care of you. Again, Joseph is looking forward to a prophecy in the future and a covenant of the future, but it's on his mind. It's in its heart. It's who he is. This covenant is very important. The covenant with Abraham was not to be forgotten. It was strong. It was important. It was passed down. I don't know how exactly it had to be verbally. It was passed down, but Abraham telling Isaac about being the promised son and all that God brought he and his wife Sarah through. And that Abraham, 99 years old, gave birth to this Isaac, and how special Isaac was. And then the picture, the story of taking him up to the altar and taking the knife to sacrifice him, and God withholding and the angel telling him to stop, and just Abraham conveying to Isaac all the meaning of his faith and the calling of God and the story of God's deliverance and all these things. Somehow Abraham passed that to Isaac, and then Isaac passed that to Jacob, and then Jacob somehow passes that torch of faith to Joseph. And here it is. Joseph, four generations, is reminding his brothers that God made a covenant to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. Don't forget about that. Don't forget about Abraham. Don't forget that God made a promise that Abraham's descendants would be as numerous as the stars in the sky. And don't forget that God promised this land to Abraham's descendants. And God will do it, he says. God will bring them out. He will take you up out of this land to the land he promised on oath to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And so you have Joseph at the end of his life remembering and holding on and even passing on that covenant to the next generation and to his brothers. Don't forget, brothers, about what God has promised to do. One of the ideas, or one of the cornerstones of a picture of the patriarchs, is that they are passing the torch to the next generation. Patriarch, we think of that term. We think of the oldest, the father, passing something down. And you have Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Joseph. The torch is to be passed. And it was key to keeping the descendants of Abraham close to God. I think what held the Hebrew people together, what held the Israelites together now over the next 430 years, what's going to hold them together? Part of it has to be this idea of community and identity as the people of God, the chosen people of God. I mean, they had to have something as they kind of fell from being in the favor of Pharaoh to the next generation, and then working their way all the way to slavery in Egypt. How did they hold on to the covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? One thing, they held on to the belief that God would bring them out sometime at some point, passing that torch on. Somehow that had to happen every generation. It had to be passed on from Joseph to his brothers and their children and the next generation. They kept that alive for 300 years or so and following that. The connection with God, the connection with chosenness. The patriarchs believed God. It was important. I mean, they believed what God said would happen. The story of the patriarchs in the book of Genesis and this idea of that ongoing belief is kind of like a smaller story within the bigger story. Just that idea of covenant being passed on, that relationship. They believed God. I also, when I think about the patriarchs, some other things that I think about is they also persevered through life's trials. When I look at Abraham's life and the things that he dealt with and he went through, question marks and why God and how possibly God can you be in this and how he challenged God. All the patriarchs, they persevered through trial. I think of Joseph here and his life. Boy, how rough that had to be sold into slavery, hated by his brothers, put in prison, accused falsely, and all those things. But he persevered, and he held on to something. He held on to his faith. He held on to the covenant. He held on to that connection with God. I also think of these patriarchs as they wrestled with God. I mean, we know Jacob physically wrestled somehow with God. But more figuratively, how each of them wrestled with who is God and how is God going to work in his promises and his covenant. So they wrestled with God. They had to wrestle with their faith and believing. But they held on to their faith. Those four generations, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph, even through the ups and downs and the failures and the good things and the rough things that happened in their life, they held on to something. There was something within the heart of these generations that they held on to tightly. They held on to their faith to the very end. And then a fifth thing that I think about the patriarch story as we come to the end of the book of Genesis is none of them lived to see the fulfillment of the covenant. When you think about that, you think about Abraham. You think about where he lived and how many descendants he had by the time he died. I didn't count that up or try to get a number for that. Or Isaac or Jacob, where you have a number with Joseph. But God gave Abraham this promise of, as the stars are in the sky, so shall your descendants be, the sand of the seashore. What did Abraham see by the time he died? Let's see, there was Ishmael. There was Isaac, and I don't even know if I remember how many were born by the time Abraham died, but it wasn't a whole lot. But yet, the New Testament says of Abraham, he believed God, and it was credited for him for righteousness. He believed what God said, whether or not he could see it or not. Whether Abraham could see the fulfillment of the covenant, he believed God. And I think that's something about faith that's good for us to remember. Faith is believing and believing God for who he is and what he says, whether or not we see it or we understand it or we can interpret it, but holding on to believing in who God is. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph were all of those things. Jacob's up and down in his life. He had to wonder. Joseph had to wonder. When he was sold into slavery by his brothers, just barely escaping death, yeah, right. Yeah, really, God has a plan for my life. He had to hold on to something, something on the inside of who he was, and he did. He held on to that faith in God and that covenant that was a part of him. And as far as we know, that never leaked out of Joseph. Maybe it even got stronger the longer he lived. Perhaps it did. It sure seems to be very strong by the time he gets to that time when he reconciles with his family, and they come down, his sense of purpose, his sense of God's plan in their lives. But even at that, Joseph acknowledges that he's a part of the covenant, he's a part of the plan, but yet he won't be alive to see it happen. He tells his brothers, someday, surely God will come to your aid and take you up out of this land to the land he promised on oath to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I wonder if Joseph thought, well, any day now, I'm going to be gone, but maybe by next spring, God's going to bring about circumstances and everybody's going to go home. I don't know if he believed that or thought that, but he says God will do it. Again, we don't always know how God chooses his timetable. Joseph might have thought, well, it's a matter of months. It's a matter of, well, maybe a couple more years. We'll kind of get everything together and the famine's over and we'll go back, the family will go back home. Could have Joseph known it was going to be 300 years? When you think of his faith when he doesn't know the timetable of God. We don't know the timetable of God. It wasn't in their lifetimes that the patriarchs saw the hand of God, but he believed in it. He knew that God would do what he said he would do. I think faith is like that. We believe We live without seeing the end, the bigger story. Sometimes we have to live by faith. What a powerful verse. What a powerful truth. The just shall live by faith. We don't live by knowing the story. We don't live by knowing how God's going to do it or when He's going to do it or by what means He's going to do it, but the just shall live by faith. And it was credited for Abraham for righteousness. He lived by faith. And I think that's a great story from the patriarchs. Certainly the story for us to cherish is not that they all were perfect people and got it right and didn't sin and didn't fail at times, because their stories of deception and what we've talked about before are all realities of life. But the good thing, one of the good things that we can learn, is that they ended up with a faith that was real all the way to the end, and God helped them to hold on to it. So Joseph holds on to this covenant idea, and he comes to the end of his life. He's 110, and he dies at the age of 110. It says he was embalmed as an Egyptian official. That would have made sense, and placed in a coffin. Again, I don't know how fancy his coffin is. Being in the British the Egyptian Museum of History and seeing those large stone coffins, sarcophagus, and those just amazing structures that were made for Egyptian monarchs and leaders, and it's just incredible the amount of energy that culture put into preparing people after they died and preserving them. But this tells me a couple things about Joseph. Number one is he still must have had great influence when he died. He was well known. I don't know how long he worked up until he was 110, or maybe much earlier, I don't know. But it tells us likely that he worked and held great authority even long into his life. His influence was there, so that his body would have been embalmed and put in a coffin, not like a commoner. Common people weren't embalmed and put into coffins, but officials were. And this tells us that Joseph held that place of high honor in Egypt until he died, to see that he was treated in this way. But we also see what was in Joseph's heart about that. He made a request. Although he had lived 93 years of 110 in Egypt, he had been blessed in Egypt, he had been given so much in Egypt, his life had been restored in Egypt, his family had come to him and been reconciled in Egypt. He lived another 55 years after his father died in Egypt, but still, what's in his heart? The covenant, the relationship with God, the descendant of Abraham, and the promise. And so, again, in verse 25, we hear at the end, he says, and then you must carry up my bones from this place. He says to his brothers, brothers, God's going to bring you out. And when he does, carry my bones up. When he does. Again, Joseph's sense of God will do what he's going to do in his timing, and you can count on it. And when he does, take up my bones. I notice there it says, and then you must carry my bones up from this place. And to me, a key word in that is the second one, and then. In other words, Joseph's not saying, well, if God does what he says he's going to do, if God ever does bring our people out, if he does, then make sure you take my bones with you. It wasn't like that. He says, when he does, then take up my bones from this place. He believed God would do it. He believed there would be a day when God would bring the people out. I don't know if he could have any concept of the Exodus and how it took place, and a million people marching out of Egypt to the Red Sea. I don't know if Joseph had any idea. Or again, he thought it would be in the spring. And surely the 200, 300 descendants by that time, 55 years later, after Jacob died, another two or three generations, maybe maybe soon those few hundred people will God will bring them out. But how could have he thought 300 years later? But when God does it, then bring my bones out. And that's exactly what happens in Exodus chapter 13. If you have forward, if you want to look it up in Exodus chapter 13, you have the story of Moses. And the Exodus out of Egypt. And Moses specifically records this in chapter 13. It says, Moses took the bones of Joseph with him. Think of that. 430 years later, perhaps, between 300 and 430 years later, Moses took the bones of Joseph with him. So you have this man hundreds of years earlier saying, and when God does it, take my bones with you. And somehow that story, that request, that passing on of something, well, you call it the covenant, you call it the promise, you call it saying, I want to be a part of the story. 300 and some years later, when Moses goes out, that story has been passed on so that Moses knows what he's supposed to do. He knows that he's to take the bones of Joseph with him, and he does it. Again, a confirmation of the importance of the oral passing of the story, and how important that was to the descendants of Abraham. The oral traditions that are passed down through the generations, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, and then each generation. And not only in this idea of passing on the covenant, but the rest of the book of Moses, the first five books of the Bible, record after record of this time period and the descendants of each of the 12 sons of Jacob and their sons and their sons' sons. And you see this genealogy that is recorded in the scriptures that show us how important the holding on of Abraham was and the continuing of the promise and the fulfillment and the direction that it went. The oral history of the patriarchs written down. Moses either wrote them down, somehow he did it, or he had someone do it. But of course, the first five books are attributed to Moses and him, his personage and his influence. The book of Moses. Again, all these stories have been passed down, and they become the book of Genesis for us. How do we get the book of Genesis? Well, eventually it came to us because Moses put together the stories. He put together that oral tradition, and maybe some was written and he included that when he had it written and put together, but the stories of Genesis, how did they come? They came because they were passed down as part of the heritage, part of the covenant, part of that connection to God. And it becomes for us the book of Genesis. To me, that just makes Genesis, it just one more thing to think about how special the book of Genesis is. It is the passing down, the passing on of the history of God with people. And so thus ends this book of Genesis. Except for, you really have to look at the first seven verses of the book of Exodus as being a part of the book of Genesis. I don't know exactly how and if ever these seven verses were attached to the book of Genesis. They come as Moses' summary of the book of Genesis. But if you just turn the page and we look at that just for a moment, you might think the first seven verses of the book of Exodus should be the 51st chapter of Genesis. But here you have the summary from Moses. These are the names of the sons of Israel who went to Egypt with Jacob, each with his family: Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, Benjamin, Dan, and Naphtali, Gad, and Asher. The descendants of Jacob numbered 70 in all. Joseph was already in Egypt. Now Joseph and all his brothers and all that generation died, but the Israelites were fruitful and multiplied greatly and became exceedingly numerous, so that the land was filled with them. So you have this summary of what happened after Joseph died. From here, there's a 300-year or so gap between verse 7 and verse 8. You have this time period that elapses that we don't have a lot of information, other than we have genealogical lists of what happened over the next 300 years. But between verse 7 and verse 8 in the book of Exodus chapter 1, you have this great gap of where the scriptures go fairly silent, and then it picks up 300 years later as the people, the descendants, this exceeding multitude is crying out to God for, God, have you abandoned us? Have you forgotten about your covenant with Abraham? Have you forgotten about the promise you made to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Joseph, and you brought the family to safety, and Joseph said, someday you're going to bring us out? And they begin to cry out to God, God, where are you? Aren't you the God of Abraham? Aren't you the God of our nation? Aren't you the God of aren't we your people? And they cry out to God. And then the book of Exodus begins to unfold of how God responds to that call and that cry and the people that are calling out to him. Exodus chapter 20, or chapter 12, verse 37, kind of describes how many people were there 300 years later. Basically, I just took part of the verse. It said, there were about 600,000 men on foot, besides women and children, that come out of Egypt. So you go from 70 to 600,000 men plus women and children, which they think probably was 1.5 to 2.5 million people. Probably may have been up to 3 million people in the Exodus. Nobody knows for sure. There are a couple references to numbers, but they're not complete in giving us every part of the group. This is 600,000 men on foot, besides women and children. Another reference in Exodus says there are 603,000, I don't remember the number, of fighting men that came out of Egypt. So there are a couple of numbers, but again, that's the men. And when you put together that population, maybe 3 million people that came out 300 years later. So you think of what happened during that time. Truly, God allowed them to multiply. And as it says here, they were fruitful and they multiplied greatly and became exceedingly numerous. And the land was full of them. God was working his covenant through Abraham. God was faithful to the descendants of Abraham. You think, did God keep his promise? Absolutely. Did he do it in the generation of Abraham? No. He began it in Isaac and Jacob and Joseph and on and on. But over time, God brought about his covenant that he made with Abraham. And this is then Exodus launches a new period in God's revelation to his people through a man named Moses and through the law, Mount Sinai, and the importance of the law. Yet, it wasn't complete. It was something, but it wasn't adequate for something, and God continues to work. And finally, the kings come and the prophets, and you have more and more of God's revelation. Again, it's not ready, it's not complete until you come to the end of the Old Testament and you have the beginning and the emergence of the Messiah. All of this a part of the history and story of God. Well, thank you. Some of you have endured this whole series on the book of Genesis. Any thoughts tonight about the covenant or anything from this story that interests you? Yeah, you think of the Bible is just about perfect people, and we need to aspire to be perfect, and we need to aspire to be like all these people. You know, we learn reality from the Bible. We learn the struggles of life. We see where God helps us in our weakness, and he uses people that are weak. He uses those that respond to him, you know, but that's true. You know, we don't read the patriarchs because they're perfect people at all. And so on the pedestal is not the right place for the patriarchs. You know, Joseph seemed to be the most character of them all, you know. He may have had flaws we don't know about, but certainly we know the flaws in the other three and how they do. Yeah. He might have been an obnoxious, prideful, too mouthy of a teenager. I can think of others that could easily... Well, I said that in that sermon about Joseph in 17. I can remember painfully some attitudes I had when I was a middle teenager. I remember mouthing off, and this is way off the subject. I remember mouthing off to a young teen leader in our youth group when I was 15 or something. And I just remember, I don't even remember why, but I remember that, and I remember what a bad attitude I had. I'm just thankful that God didn't zap me then. You know, I may have really deserved that, but yeah. We're in it for the long haul, and God is patient with us, and he works on us, and thankful for that. Other thoughts or anything on your mind? I will say one thing. In verse 8, the next verse, it says, then a new king who did not know about Joseph came to power in Egypt. That's when things started to change. That's when things started to change. The new king, the new Pharaoh. You know, people forget quickly the glories of the past. And they might have seen all the people taking the good land and all their animals doing great. And, you know, that probably got on their nerves because they didn't like the dirty Canaanites anyway. You know, and Joseph had warned them about that. The shepherds, you know, and all those things. Anything else? Thank you for being here tonight. Hope you have a good day tomorrow. Dear Heavenly Father, thank you for your faithfulness. Thank you for your promises. Thank you, God, that you are a God of covenant and you're a God that keeps your promises. Help us to trust you. Help us to keep our eyes on you. Help us to learn from this great book what you want us to. Help our faith to be strong and to be real. Help us, God, to seek you with all that we are and to live by faith, I pray. In Jesus' name.